Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning, Pastor Scheidbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Are you ready for your gray matter massage?
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Paul Revere's lantern lighter here, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties, the rise of the Obama beast. Here you go, quote, White House spent $23 million of taxpayer money to back the Kenyan constitution that legalizes abortion, GOP representatives say, end quote. Now what is this about? Why would Obama spend $23 million to lobby Kenyan lawmakers to legalize abortion? We know he is covered in the blood of innocent babies, murdered in the wombs of their mothers. But is he really such a proponent of abortion he thinks he needs to commit the resources of the United States government to encourage the legalization of abortion in other countries too? Now, some of you libs think America is arrogant and imperialist because we want to encourage liberty wherever there is a cry for it, and a move to secure it. I mean, that is consistent with our own history, is it not? After all, remember when George Washington and Benjamin Franklin and the rest of our founders kept courting the support of the French in our own war for liberty? Oh yeah, we directly appealed to the French to step in and help us in our war for independence. So I guess if we recognized the legitimacy of appealing to foreign intervention on our own behalf when we were trying to throw off the shackles of tyranny, well, then we owe it to any people who desire liberty to support them in every way that we can. All right, back to the point. Hey, dimwit. By the way, that is a special brain massage term, D-E-M for Democrat, hyphen W-I-T, which, well, you know what it means, refers to your mental sharpness, your intelligence. So dimwit refers to someone whose intelligence is under the spell of the current radical left ideology of the Democratic Party. Like the charade, or Van Jones belching out his anti-American rhetoric, threatening us that the Obama gang intends to completely change the system into communism, by the way, which is Van's avowed favorite system. And how will they accomplish this? Well, brother, let me tell you, it's like that new Black Panther character said, or they're going to riot in the streets and kill Whitey, the men, the women, and also the cracker babies, because those white cracker babies got to be off, man. How dare the NAACP even suggest that the Tea Party needs to rein in its racism. And Obama wants Sherrod to be returned to her job and apologizes to her for being fired when she was fired for openly racist comments and for using her position in her government job to persecute citizens of another race, entirely on the basis of skin color, by the way. Now listen up, I do my homework here, you know that. You're being told that she was taken out of context. All right, well, let's bring the context into this. Let's take a look at it. On March 27, 2010, and that's only, what, 4 months ago, Sherrod was speaking at an NAACP function when she described a white farmer who, according to Sherrod, was talking on and on, she said, trying to impress her with his superiority. And she says, I knew what he was doing, end quote. This she said, by the way, to her black audience, responding with, yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, they all get it, they all know. Because they all understand that when Whitey talks on and on, well, he is, of course, trying to show his superiority to black people, right? All right, I was not there, and this is her characterization of that poor white farmer who was about to lose his family farm. But I've been on the white guy's side of these conversations before, and I've discovered that I was being perceived in this way when nothing could be farther from the truth. I know what she was up to here. You know what I mean? I mean, this just goes back and forth. Anyway, her argument is that her statements in that talk were taken out of context, and that actually she was offering a testimony of her own personal growth experience, where she came to understand that it really isn't about white versus black. It's about the poor versus those who have. You know, when you listen to the actual statement, she does not say she learned that it's not about white and black. In fact, she cannot bring herself to let that go. I'll show you a short excerpt of this. I don't have time to give you the full one, but if you call in and get my notes on this show, I give you the link where you can go listen to the entire thing. So you see, my friends, this woman is locked in her racist bigotry. She can't let it go. And it's going to take some more time before she finally comes fully around to her newfound insight. She can't fully break away from the racist paradigm of white versus black to adopt her new revelation that it's not about race. It's about the haves and the have-nots. Oh, my. My concern is not so much that she continues to struggle with the white versus black bigotry, the racism that virtually defines the NAACP. Rather, I'm more concerned about her newfound revelation, God help us. She's come to understand that it's all about the struggle between the haves and the have-nots, which is textbook Marxism and always leads to tyranny. Now, but for the moment, let us think about something here. Obama's administration refuses to prosecute a member of the new Black Panther movement who intimidated voters as they entered a polling booth in Philadelphia in the 08 election. And this is the same Black Panther member, by the way, whose voice you have heard recently calling for white babies to be murdered because they're white. So here we have a president who endorses racist persecution of one race and protects another racist man from prosecution for when he violates the law, interferes with the people's right to vote by aggressive intimidation. And Obama and company would charge America with imperialism when we step in and liberate a people out from under the heel of tyrants, supporting the heart cry of a people for liberty and justice. But it's not imperialism to interfere with the politics of a country in order to promote the murder of unborn babies in the womb. Obama spends $23 million United States dollars to promote abortion in Kenya. Oh yeah, he gave $3 million to a group, quote, advocating for their efforts to eventually legalize abortion in Kenya, end quote. And about $180,000 was given by our government to the Committee of Experts on Constitutional Review in Kenya, who has changed the wording of the Kenyan Constitution's abortion clause to make, quote, abortion more widely accessible, end quote. Well, what Obama has done here is against the law, but, you know, so is holding the office of president when you're not a natural-born citizen of the United States. So he broke the law. America's not supposed to lobby on abortion in other countries. It's called the Siljander Amendment. But it won't matter to anyone, at least not to the bobbing head liberals who just blindly go along with all of this. What other reason could Obama have for supporting the new Kenyan Constitution? Is he expecting that maybe after he is finally impeached here, he will go back to his home country of Kenya? Thank you, Michelle. And become its president? He would like their constitution better than ours, I think. I checked into this new Kenyan constitution, and what they did is they made it nearer to our own with some exceptions. One of them is, in their constitution, they expressly provide for abortion as a right, whereas here, that right had to be fabricated by a distortion of the constitution. So Obama would like that better. It would, after all, make it more secure and less likely to be overturned, as it is certain to be overturned here. And it would also make a better climate for promoting partial birth abortion or even post-birth abortion, huh? I mean, you know, if the babies are autistic, for example, and this is too much for the mother to bear, well, why not kill them after they're born? Hey, hope I pronounced his name right, Saika Akhtar. I'm not sure I pronounced that correctly. In any event, this lady decided she did not want autistic kids. And as she explained to the 9/11 dispatcher, both are autistic. I don't want my kids to be like that. I want normal kids. And so she wrapped a wire around their necks and, well, strangled them. And that after trying to get them to drink some kind of kitchen poison or something like that, cleanser or whatever. You see, that's what pro-aborts say, really. You don't want autistic kids? Well, kill them. Only they advocate you do it before they're born, because then it's legal. Perhaps we'll make it legal to get rid of troublesome children after they're born, huh? We'll see, but for now, you've got to do this killing business of the unwanted kids before they're born, okay? Someone should explain that to Seika. I mean, Boxer did suggest she figured the children don't have a right to life until they're taken home from the hospital, you know. Well, anyway, Obama, now he takes the cake on this abortion business. He would have the doctors kill a baby that survived an attempt to murder it in the womb. He did vote against the Born Alive Protection Act, you know. Not even Boxer was that cold-blooded. Well, actually, her statements make it clear she just was concerned that voting against the Born Alive Protection Act would be something near political suicide. But hey, it worked for Obama. I mean, he's president after all. Anyway, Obama spent $23 million U.S. dollars to promote adoption. Not adoption of babies as an alternative to murdering them in the womb, but rather adoption of a new Kenya constitution that would provide for murdering them in the womb. We're trying to figure out why. You know, if he is planning to become president of Kenya after he closes that gig here in the United States, he would be interested in them adopting a constitution he can live with, would he not? Well, Obama perhaps would like this in the Kenyan Constitution under the devolution provision. And by the way, that is the transfer or delegation of power from a higher to a lower level of government. The Kenyan Constitution, quote, will not allow regions, say states, to act autonomously, end quote. And this provision might be no different from our own limitations on state autonomy, where state autonomy is subordinated to the federal government. But the language of the Kenyan Constitution taken together really is more stringent. In that system, the president really is virtually the federal government, if you will, so that by comparison, it would amount to this. The president could sign an executive order that would impose restrictions upon the autonomy or state rights of each state. And boy, wouldn't Obama like that. He could then, with a stroke of a pen, solve his problem with Arizona, you know. Imagine Arizona supposing they can protect their own borders by enforcing laws that are virtually identical to federal laws, but contrary to Obama's policy. Another benefit to Obama would be he would not have to be concerned about citizenship issues. After all, he is a Kenyan citizen. But anyway, Obama promoted adoption of this new constitution because he plans to become the president of his home country of Kenya someday? No. As we'll see, it's all about abortion, my friends. Anyway, let me summarize the first segment. We'll take a short break. Let's see here. President-elect Obama spent over $100,000 of taxpayer money to take his wife on a date. Oh, no. That's not what we're talking about. Although that does trump Clinton's, what, $23,000 haircut or some crazy thing where he held up air traffic for something like an hour anyway. Oh, yeah, Obama spent $23 million to help Kenyans adopt a new constitution that makes some significant changes in the law of that land there. The most significant change being abortion will be legalized in Kenya. Millions were given directly to groups in Kenya whose purpose is to advocate for the legalization of abortion in Kenya. I mean, this man's love for the abortion industry seems pathological. His radical support of abortion extends to refusing to support the Born Alive Protection Act. He has vigorously endorsed the legalization of partial birth abortion. And he encourages taxpayer funding of abortion. You know, like Meg Whitman, by the way. They'd get along very well on this issue. All of this encourages me to think it is in harmony with Obama's overall agenda to promote murdering babies around the world. And he would call us imperialists for extending the reach of our influence in the countries to help them become free, you know, purple finger free. But he would arrogantly, and by the way, illegally, offer money to pro-abortion Kenyan officials and pro-abortion organizations in Kenya advocating for the legalization of abortion in that country. His obsession with promoting abortion, I mean, it borders on sadistic. It probably crosses that border. And that and homosexuality, by the way, have you noticed? Both death styles. He is fixated on promoting abortion and homosexuality. He has a Hitler-esque obsession with death. Pay attention. Obama aggressively promotes abortion and homosexuality, specifically the two sins that provoke the divine wrath of God upon a people. I'll be right back.
To make a donation, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com or mail your gift to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Church is not the place to be trolling for chicks, and it's not a talent show for rockers. So if you want a rock concert, call Ticketmasters. But if you're looking for a church that takes the lordship of Jesus seriously, and you can endure sound doctrine proclaimed straight from the Bible with the preaching that tells it like it is, without fear or compromise, come to the Lighthouse, where we are shining shining the light of God's truth to help families safely navigate through the moral storms of our day. Call 347-9887 for more information. See our ad in the Coastal Pages directory.
Pastor Scheidbach is charging the gates of hell. Don't leave him hanging. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com to make a donation or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, spokesperson for God, and Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter. So, President-elect, where's your birth certificate, sir? Has offered to get the American dollars flowing into Kenya if only they will adopt this new constitution that provides for the legalization of abortion. Imperialism! Interfering with the politics of a sovereign foreign state. His policies have directed U.S. representatives there to encourage Kenyan officials to support the new constitution by promising that passage of this new constitution would, quote, allow money to flow into the nation's coffers, end quote. And guess what? The new Kenyan constitution was not written by Kenyans. Oh, yeah. It was written by, quote, U.S.-funded NGOs working in concert with Planned Parenthood, end quote. An NGO, by the way, is a non-government organization. How about that? What do the Kenyans think of this? Well, at least some of them, probably not including Obama's relatives over there, but some of them, quote, think that the role of American organizations like Planned Parenthood in drafting the Kenyan Constitution compromises Kenyan sovereignty and assaults its cultural heritage, end quote. So you see, that's what Obama's doing. He's assaulting the cultural heritage of a foreign country. He's compromising the sovereignty of a foreign country. Anyway, I guess this refutiates my suspicion that Obama is supporting this new Kenyan constitution because he plans to become president of Kenya after he's been thrown out on his ear over here. Oh, well. I guess it's about promoting the death industry of abortion after all. And by the way, I did not misspeak. I said refutiate, and I meant refutiate. You probably caught the twister stirring on Palin's misspeak. She is a clever lady. The libs have a hard time with her because she knows how to play them. They are hammering her on her misspeak when she twittered asking moderate Muslims to refutiate plans to build a mosque in view of Ground Zero. You know, there in Manhattan. I've already addressed that, but she followed this up with a statement in which she used this new word in public. So I guess it wasn't tweet speak. So the Lame Street Media, and I can't take credit for Lame Street Media. That's a good one. Where did I get that? I'm not going to be able to take time to find it. Don't get torqued out on me. My dad invented that one, by the way. If you hear this show, just call and I'll give you a glittering attribution for your clever phrasing, Lame Street Media. Anyway, so Palin's refutiate was not tweet speak. Either she thinks it's a word or she's playing Shakespeare and coining new words to enrich American vernacular. Don't call and correct me on the pronunciation of Shakespeare. I did it on purpose. But this lady's sharp. They're trying hard to quail her, as in borking someone. There's quailing someone. Remember? Mr. Tomato Tongue couldn't spell tomato without an E. So they're trying to quail Palin, but she's slick. She shoots back and fires off a tweet, bringing attention to the fact that Bush, too, coined a new word, misunderestimate. And the current president alleged, you know, he introduced his own wee-weed up into American parlance. And now Palin has introduced refutiate. So, as my beloved Dove would say, there you have it. Now, someone with that much political maneuvering capability just might find a way to explain this one to me. Why, Palin, did you endorse a candidate here in California who is pro-abortion and wants to spend taxpayer money to fund it? I'm talking about Meg Whitman, and I really want an answer to that question. Anyway, looking at current polls for the president-elect must be depressing to the Bush haters and the Bush beaters. Guess what? Jeb Bush might run. And by the way, the way things are shaping up in the polls, we understand any Republican beats Obama right now. For my part, folks, I'm done with the Bushes. I love George Bush, too. He did a lot of great things for this country. He also messed up real bad. But I'm sure Bush will go down in history once we've wrested out of the hands of the libfibbers. Bush, too, will go down in history as the man who began the liberation of the Arab nations from under the tyranny of Sharia oppression. Nothing is going to solve the Mideast problem that does not include freedom for the people to determine their own government. Nothing will stop the insanity over there except the notion that those who govern derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. In fact, Bush 1 and 2 will be acknowledged to be the leaders in the free world who initiated the beginning of Daniel's prophecy concerning the Middle East. You know what? Let's take a look at that for a moment. I recently tweaked out a liberal by bringing this his attention to this, as you're going to love it. Bible thump alert. Bible thump alert. In Daniel 7, Daniel records his vision of the four beasts. The first was a lion, the second was a bear, and the third was a leopard, and the fourth was a creature that has no earthly counterpart. The first represents Babylon, which is modern-day Iraq. The second represents Persia, and it's usually associated with Iran and Russia, combined with Russia and or China. The third represents Eastern Europe, which usually is identified with Greece. And the fourth represents Western Europe. And there's discussion about whether Germany or Italy specifically, Rome in Italy, is to be identified with this beast. The four beasts of Daniel describe the alignment of the nations as they will appear in the time of the end. The order in which these beasts arise is very particularly noted in the prophecy, which means it's significant. The first beast, which begins the end-time geopolitical alignment of the world's powers, is described as a lion with the wings of an eagle. Now, these eagle's wings are plucked off its back, and then the lion stands up on its own hind legs and receives the heart of a man. Now, that's the first phase in the development of nations that begins the fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy and is a kind of prophetic line of demarcation where we move into the time of the end. The lion represents Babylon, and geographically, Babylon is in modern-day Iraq. In fact, Hussein fancied himself a reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar and had plans to rebuild Babylon, by the way. And according to Bible prophecy, Revelation chapter 18, Babylon will be the center of world commerce in the time of the end. Now think about this. This lion represents a major transformation that takes place in the Middle East, a transformation that is so profound it is represented as a four-legged beast, a lion, standing up on its hind feet like a man and receiving the heart of a man. Now consider the general, not the particular, not that it applies to every individual, but the general character of that region of the world. It is beast-like. Fierce, even, like the first emperor of the world who ruled from Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, once had his heart changed from man's heart to the heart of a beast. You read that in Daniel 4. And then he was restored. Well, those familiar with history will recognize the same phenomenon has taken place among the peoples of that region generally. They become like a beast, man. I mean, go ahead and get all politically correct on me if you want to. That's your problem. I don't have that nonsense getting in the way of my ability to think. I can look at something and see it for what it is. Wrapping your children in explosives and sending them into restaurants to commit suicide and murder on behalf of some crazy god called Allah is about as beast-like as you can get. Flying jets into the World Trade Center to murder 3,000 people, virtually all of whom have never done anything deserving of death, is about as much like an animal as I can imagine. Now, we've got some of those animals here in America, too. Don't get me wrong. We've got some beasts like that, that new Black Panther member who is calling for cracker babies to be murdered because they're white, you know. We've got some animals and some animal keepers, like Obama, who identify with these people, and Van Jones, people who think that whitey today ought to pay for slavery committed by people who are in no way connected with something like 99% of the white people living here today. What nonsense. But like animals, they see people as prey and themselves a predator. It's all about revenge and spoil. It's about, now please listen here, it's about the haves and the have-nots. Animals. That is the basic animal motive, is it not? That animal over there has what I want, and that makes it my enemy, and I'm going to take it. Every one of you who buys into the animal philosophy that genders anger and resentment between haves and have-nots, you are a beast, a predator, waiting to pounce and prey upon those you regard as your competition for food or other goods. You are angry with someone because they have something you don't have. You are a beast. You are an animal. But more on that later, when I expose the truth underneath communism and what makes communism so difficult to deal with. It is rooted in envy and appeals to the beast rather than to the best in men. Don't you read your Bible, you silly liberal Christian? Don't you see the verses that speak of God's blessing upon his people to give them plenty and riches for their wisdom and labor? But you categorize everybody in two broad classifications. You don't distinguish between those who have because they worked for it, because they were wise, because they were righteous before God and were blessed. No, like a beast. You look at them and see only one thing. They have what you want. And this makes them your enemy. And you lick your chops and bide your time, watching enviously from across the field, waiting for your opportunity to attack. You are a beast. You have been reduced to the level of an animal. And those who purposely trained you to be like an animal intend to use you as their, as their pawns to take over the hunting grounds. Oh, yeah. To take from the halves. They'll throw you a few bones, but they will devour the lion's share. But back to Daniel's prophecy. The beginning of the time of the end is marked by a miraculous transformation in the Middle East. Daniel revealed that this transformation begins in Iraq, when the lion, Iraq, receives the wings of an eagle. Who could help but think of America there? Then, those eagle's wings will be plucked off, and the lion will stand upon its back legs and be transformed. The general characteristic of the people of that region will be fundamentally changed. They're going to stop attacking Israel. They're going to stop wrapping their children or themselves in explosives and committing outrageous acts of terrorism. They're going to become humane. They will join the Nations for Peace, and George W. Bush and his father will be remembered as the men who were used of the Almighty to initiate this transformation. Right after this, or coincident with it, Iran, combined with Russia or China or both, will combine, and one side will be higher than the other or stronger, and they will dominate. You know what? I'm noticing I'm getting near my time here. So I don't have time to discuss the three ribs of the four-headed leopard or the ten-horned beast. Good stuff, but really, you need to come to my Bible study where we dig into these things. I've got to wrap it up. I hope you get the point. America is presently governed by those who would appeal and do appeal to the beast in human nature and not to the best in human nature. There are people who view the world like an animal views it. If you have something they want, they just find a way to take it, to use whatever power they have to take it from you. They don't see things in terms of property rights. They see everything in terms of those who have property and those who do not. That is what is truly dangerous about what Sherrod said in her racist comments. She said that she now understands that the struggle between white and black is transcended by the greater struggle between the haves and the have-nots. At the root of modern-day liberalism is a basic beast-like mentality. They view the world as divided between those who have and those who have not. They appeal to the beast in human nature, motivating them to believe it's just to take what belongs to the haves and give it to the have-nots. At least that's the excuse they use for taking it. You know, as if having is itself somehow evil. But like a dumb beast, they haven't thought it through, because once the have-nots take from the haves, well then, do they not become the haves? And the present haves become the have-nots? Only, you see, now you've created a beast because you've trained your animals to envy the haves merely on the ground that they have more than someone else. So now the keepers will have to control the beast they've created. You see, that is what happens when you appeal to the beast and cultivate the beast and not the best in human nature. When the best in human nature is cultivated, you can contrive to live in liberty. But cultivate the beast, and nothing will do to control it but tyranny. And when the masters rise to herd the beast, oh, they will feed themselves from your labor. And you're right back where you started, in the ranks of the have-nots, with one difference. Now, you are a slave. I've lit the lights in the belfry arch that signal the enemies on the march. Call in and let me know you see the lights are on. Our 888 number is toll-free from anywhere in this country. Give me a call at 1-888-770-8000. That number again is 1-888-770-8000. And say lights on if you agree with me. Say lights off if you disagree with me. So it's very simple, very easy. You could call it, check in real quick. I want every station to check in. Come on, take a moment to give me a call. 1-888-770-8000. Ball me out if you want. Or offer some encouragement. We can always use some of that, you know. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message.
Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com for an archive of great brain massage shows that you can download and distribute to others free of charge. If you want to give us a gift to help with broadcasting costs, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and click on the donate button, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.